Welcome to Insignium Bits, conversations about breakthrough, innovation, and transformation.
Hi, this is John Ball, Director of Content at Insignium. I recently had the chance to speak with Kurt Nielsen, a seasoned pharmaceutical executive with over 20 years of diverse expertise, having most recently served as the CEO and President of Pharmaceuticals International Incorporated, also known as PI, where he brought a measurable track record of success within both business-to-consumer and business-to-business companies. Prior to his time at PI, Mr. Nielsen served as the Vice President of U.S. Development, Portfolio, and Launch Management at Sandoz Incorporated, a subsidiary of Novartis Group. His responsibilities included spearheading the U.S. development of generic over-the-counter and specialty branded products. Notably, Mr. Nielsen also has held senior leadership positions at Calient Incorporated, where he served as a Senior Vice President of Research and Development and Chief Technology Officer, as well as at URL Pharma, where he served as Executive Vice President of Pharmaceuticals. Mr. Nielsen was kind enough to share his unique perspective and insights on the evolving paradigm of leadership within biotech and the consumer health pharmaceutical industry, and how to achieve bold results by approaching each member of your team as a unique fingerprint. Without further ado, here's our conversation. So, first and foremost, in doing my homework, getting ready for the interview, looking at your background, very genuinely impressed just how well-rounded you are. Your career track, I think, probably created a very specific point of view on leadership. Before we get into that, though, walk us through your early career background and what led you to pursue a career path in pharma.
Well, first of all, John, really appreciate the opportunity to to talk to you and your audience. Especially when you give a great open-ended question, like, tell me about yourself. most people are happy to do that, even us introverts. But and I think, as I really kind of thought about that question, probably goes back to when I was a kid, right? And trying not to get even emotional to kind of get connected to that thought. But my grandfather had Alzheimer's disease, and I didn't really understand why. But it was something that was really important to me, right? I thought about and I wrote about it. I wrote a letter to my mom about it. And I think that's really where the genesis of my career really comes from, and what really kind of motivated me and drove me to get into the sciences and get into healthcare and the pharmaceutical business. And I think that's really where its roots are. From there, really when did I get into pharma was when I started working at Johnson & Johnson, their consumer health division. It was a great kind of indoctrination into the world of pharma and pharma marketing, even though it was in the consumer health space. And at that point, John, I was just hooked, right? I mean, just this whole idea of you could be working in a business where you can scratch these two itches that you have, one to do really good science and bring treatments and cures to the world, but then also be part of a business, right? Where you're interacting with people, like you're figuring out how to solve problems that, ultimately are about getting people to understand each other, what their needs are, what they're after, in terms of their business, and then kind of bridging those gaps, right? And, putting that, win-win together. What was really the hook for me in the pharmaceutical business was really, John, just this idea of this wonderful mix of the science and the business. And they really met in a way that was just so interesting and compelling. I said, I will spend the rest of my life doing this.
I like that. Yeah. I'd be curious to know from your point of view, having led and built teams before, it's almost like you're putting together an orchestra, right? Yeah. Making sure you get the right people in the right seats and everyone is, skilled in their individual roles. From your point of view, or I guess from your seat, what does it take to make that happen? I would assume an understanding of the people that you lead, but there's probably an art to it, I would imagine, as much as a science, right?
Yeah. I think it's a great, great question, right? There's a lot of kind of avenues to that we could go down or tentacles to the, to the answer. But I think it's most important to have a point of view. And when I say, have a point of view, right, it's not in the sense that point of view is rigid, right? And there's a, a command and control, right? Or a rigidity, right, to that point of view. but it's about having a point of view around not only how the world is today, but how it should be. And on a constant basis, be asking yourself, well, okay, well, there's always going to be a gap, but what is that gap? Does that matter? Do I need to close it? If I need to close it, who can I get to help me close it? Who will be the person who will be, you know, responsible and accountable for that? You know, that's what I think is kind of where the singularity is. Because I think, you know, at some point in your career, you get to a point where you've got your favorite tools that you use and you're really good at using them.
Right.
And you almost get to a point where you could build a whole house with a hammer, right?
Right.
But it's so then it's not so much about, okay, you know, how far do the studs need to be and where do I need to run the wires, right? As much as it is, what do I want this space to look like? How do I want the spaces next to it to flow and feed into the other ones, right? What do I want people to think and feel, right, that they can do when they first approach whatever it is that we're doing, right, from that first moment, right, of that experience? How does it, you know, evolve? And I think all that really flows from a point of view on not only how the world is today, but how it could be and how it should be.
I like that a lot. It sounds to me, too, like you have that point of view, you own that vision. It's, you know, kind of incumbent, I would imagine, on you, other leaders, to get teams enrolled, bought into that vision in order to accomplish the task at hand. I would be curious, how do you get people to understand, embrace it, and be willing to fight for it, defend it, work hard to accomplish that vision too?
It's a great question. If I take a step back from it, though, I think a lot of it really comes down to the way that you express your belief in this point of view. There's authenticity and being genuine, right? Whatever word you want to use. It's so easy for people to see it when it's there and to see it when it's not there, even for a second. It's, to me, it's amazing how perceptive people are. I mean, it's ultimately rooted in a survival instinct, right? That's, you know, hundreds of millions of years old, right? In the making. But people that you work with know, right, when you're committed to, you know, an outcome, that you believe, right, in this point of view that you have, and that you're willing to do what's necessary in order to bring that point of view or bring that vision into life or into reality. And you can never let it change, in the sense that you always need to continually kind of express that confidence. Because what I'm really trying to go back to is, the moment you start questioning it, or the moment you're doing it for some other purpose than what you truly believe, then that's when your followership starts to question it. And it can start in slow and insidious ways, right? So it's just, again, to me, it's just this whole idea of, it starts with your belief, your authentic and genuine expression of that point of view. That goes a long way. And then I think the other thing that's really, really important is to really understand the diversity of the way that other people will relate to you and your point of view. Everybody processes information differently. Everybody is motivated differently. Yeah, certainly we can bucketize, right? I mean, there's certainly plenty of methodologies, right? You know, including the Jungian personality types, right? But still, even within those different, you know, archetypes, like there's uniqueness, right? You know, people are really fingerprints. And so always understanding that and recognizing that also then creates this environment where you are really building a relationship with the people who need to believe in what you're doing, and then will be able to carry that forward. Because again, when folks realize that you're going with a cookie cutter approach and you're just kind of painting with a broad brush, you know, that has the opposite effect. I mean, it really is demotivating. So having that genuine, authentic belief in what you're doing and what you're out to accomplish, and then recognizing that really everybody you're working with is a fingerprint, and you want to, you know, match and complement that, you know, with your communications and the way that you relate to people, and then be ruthlessly consistent. And if you're not, and you have those lapses, you know, I don't know if they use the phrase vulnerable, right? But to say, you know what, I missed the point, right? Or I had, you know, a lapse, right? However people say it and express it. But I think, again, expressing, you know, your humanness, right? Because nobody's perfect, right? And so acknowledging that as well, maybe that's the word I'm looking for, right? acknowledging when you either miss the opportunity or you just have a moment where, you know what, I just don't feel like expressing it this way. I'm going to express a doubt. It's always okay to come back and say, yeah, well, look, you know, yesterday I said some things and, you know, that's how I felt yesterday, but, you know, this is what we're out to accomplish. We need to keep going. And I've always found that for people who you've built that trust relationship with, they nod their head and they say, yeah, well, boy, and they can relate to that because they've had those days too, right? And we're all in this together. I think ultimately that's what that being okay with a lack of perfection, right? And saying it's all part of the journey, I think is what really gets people going and gets them motivated because it appeals to their humanness.
Right, right. When you look back, do you feel like that's something that you learned through trial and error? Or were there leaders that you worked with maybe early in your career who were a good example of connecting those two things, that genuine authenticity with that approach that every person is that fingerprint?
I mean, it's the benefit of hindsight, right? And looking back and connecting the dots versus trying to do it, you know, looking forward in that moment. So I guess what I mean by that is I was only able to see what I just expressed to you after, you know, reflecting on certain portions or big chunks of my career. So yeah, today I would say there was, I would say several peers and bosses that I had that I took on those, I'll say, leadership and management traits that I saw. And at the time I did it because there was an appeal to it. I wasn't even sure why, right? I mean, upon reflection, it's like, well, yeah, I mean, that's really a core belief, right? That I have, right? But I didn't really appreciate or have the awareness that was a core belief, you know, until, you know, much later in life. Yeah, I would say almost every place I worked, right, there was, you know, one or two people where that how they conducted themselves was really made an impression upon me. And I separate and sort of make a distinction between management and leadership. But yeah, I mean, but a part of it is just being open to it as well, right? But believe me, right, there was plenty of times when, you know, in hindsight, I would say, I mean, it was brutal or ignorant or rude, right? And I would absolutely use those words to describe it. So it's not like I'm sitting here today going, oh yeah, I mean, it was sort of this great and wonderful, you know, an epic journey, right? And it was from peak to peak. I mean, there was plenty of valleys, you know, in between, and plenty of mistakes along the way. But what I believe now makes a difference, that's why I'm so passionate about it, right? And that's why I love to, you know, talk about these things, right? Because not good things reinforce, you know, all those good things that happened along the way, and to do more of them.
Exactly. I mean, there's real data to what you're saying. There was an article I read recently in the Harvard Business Review that it was like 70% of executives that were surveyed said that failure or setbacks were their strongest teacher as a leader. Were there setbacks? Were there challenges? Were there missteps, self-doubt that you had to contend with, overcome to move to the next phase of your career? And have any of those lessons stuck with you?
Yes. All right. So I'm just kind of, as I'm sitting here thinking about the question, right? I mean, it's obviously like my career is flashing before my eyes, right? But there's like all different moments, right? So I'm just, it's a little bit like the Minority Report, right? I'm just trying to sort of room here, right? So I was like, okay, well, let me pick one and start articulating it. I mean, really, you know, early failure, right? And different levels of failure really is in performance management. And when I say performance management, like when you know somebody is not able to perform or is in the wrong role, whatever it is, just not handling that in the best possible way, right? So engaged in, you know, all the classic behaviors that, you know, you shouldn't do, right? Okay, well, you know, first of all, avoiding it, you know, then, you know, saying, well, it's not really an issue, and kind of rationalizing it to, you know, moving the person to another role that it isn't going to be any better. It's kind of making it somebody else's problem. Like, so it kind of goes the long kind of list of not taking concerted action, right? So this whole idea, look, if it's inevitable, make it immediate, is sort of the other, you know, end of the spectrum, right? And, you know, ultimately, you know, what I learned along the way is it's just really important to have small conversations along the way about what's working and what's not working, right? I mean, almost on a daily basis, right? And to not be apprehensive about having conversations around the softer side of the results, right? Or how you get the results. So, I mean, again, early in the career, it's like, it's all about the results. Let's get this done. Let's get the outcome, right? And the how, it mattered, but not nearly as much as getting the result. So again, learning that lesson that like how you get the result and the wake that you leave is as important as the outcome itself, right? Because you can get the outcome once if you're going to be brutal. Getting it the next time is just that much harder, right? And then it just causes all the wake that you leave is just way too disruptive. So I would say those, say big and small failures, you know, along the way. But then look, I'll play that the other way around. And okay, when I did, I say learn those lessons, you figure out, okay, well, of the 100 people that I think I could help, well, you know what? I found a way that could more quickly assess the one or two out of those 100 that when you engage in a conversation about improvement or change or transformation, they're willing to engage with you and do the work, right? And then invest heavily, right? Because it will make a difference. But then for all those other situations, don't get so emotionally tied to them. Don't make them personal, right? It's really about everybody makes their own choices, right? So this was another like incredibly valuable lesson I probably learned in the last 10 years. It's just everything is about choices and people make their own choices. And so that was really a liberating, you know, moment for me when I started to talk with, you know, the people that I worked with, right? Whether I worked for them or they worked for me or we were peers, right? Everything was in this framework of choices. So here's your choice. There is an X and a Y, and here's the good and the bad of each one. And here's the data, right, that I'm seeing that I think it's looking like it's going to be choice X. But I'm happy to support either one of your choices, but you're the one who needs to choose. And I'm here to support you to a certain extent so that you can make that choice, but you have to choose. And that was really what was kind of liberating for me and was really transformational for me in terms of, you know, really being able to, I'll say, manage and lead people and do it in a way that, you know, I felt good about every day.
I like that. It's a great segue to the current issue of Insignium Quarterly is all about the changing paradigm of leadership. And as you're talking about how you relate and interact with your teams, it is very clear to see you are someone I would imagine who prioritizes inclusiveness. The folks that I've talked to at Insignium who work with you on a daily basis, I mean, that's what they've said to me behind the scenes, that you are really that leader that can build consensus and bring people together. So this might be something that, you know, is old hat for you, but are you seeing changes with how leaders approach teams, with how that paradigm of leadership is being defined? And then what does it look like today?
You know, I'll probably speak out of both sides of my mouth, right? And say on the one hand it hasn't changed, and on the other hand it's, you know, it's completely different. You know, I think in the area where it hasn't changed is the essence of leadership is really the ability to connect with people so that they understand, not just feel that they've been heard. So many people, right, you know, confuse being heated with being heard, right? So long as people have been heard, I think they will follow, right? They will sign up and be part of the, you know, the followership for you as a, you know, as a manager, right, and a leader, right? And I'm not saying like, you know, hey, just you gotta listen in this particular conversation, but, you know, heard means you're able to reflect back to that person that you really understand what their point was, what their situation is, you know, what their outlook is, or what the, you know, their vision is, right? That takes time, right? And when people understand that you've taken the time to really synthesize and think about what they've said, boy, there's real power there, right? I mean, not power over people, right? But power in the sense that leads to, you know, alignment and agreement on this is what we're going to do, right? Or when you need someone to follow what you're doing, they're happy to do it, and you're happy to do that for that other person, right? So this sort of, you know, reply these or to repay these things in kind. So I think that hasn't changed. I don't think it ever will change, right? I mean, like that just is part of, you know, our humanness, right? To be heard, right? To be included. To be part of something, right? To be part of something that's bigger than yourself, right? So I think that's the same. I think what's what's different or what constantly changes is, you know, what each generation of staffer, right, values, right? And that's what's so, I'd say, fascinating to me, right? So, I mean, the way that I was, you know, brought up, you know, as a Gen Xer, right? I mean, you know, if you were given a task, if you were given a chore, it didn't matter if it took you an hour to do it or 8 hours to do it. Like, you needed to get it done, right? There was no question about, well, you know, hey, you know, mom and dad, or hey, Mr. Supervisor or boss, no matter what I was doing, you know, hey, I'm only going to do this for an hour, and whatever I get done in an hour, like, that's it. And I think that it's just very different now, right, with some of those younger generations, right? And it's not a fault thing, right? It's just the way they were raised, their environment was completely different, you know, than ours, right? I mean, certain things that we value are the same, but certain other things are really, you know, very different. And I think that's the challenge, right? That's what's changed. And I think the way to deal with that, and I think we've been talking about that, you know, since the beginning here, is again this whole idea of, you know, each person is a fingerprint. So then the question is, well, what do you do then as a leader, right? How do you get connected with somebody who has a fundamentally different belief and core value system than you do, right? And that to me is the challenge. But again, that comes back to the, so long as people feel like they've been heard, you know, then you can really bridge any gaps. So kind of the tools of how you deal with the challenges, I don't think that changes, John. I don't think it's going to change.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We've been talking about the future. So let me ask you, it's many years from now, you're sitting on a beach, you've got a drink in your hand, you're thinking about your career, thinking back on, you know, on everything. What would you like your legacy to be? How would you want people to talk about you, remember you? You know, when they say, hey, did you work with Kurt Nielsen? Absolutely. What's the impression that you hope to leave with folks?
I'd say two things. One is that they enjoyed it. Right, that there was enjoyment in it. That doesn't mean it was always fun, right? But there was enjoyment in it, and that was treated fairly. That's it. People say they were treated fairly, right? And I mean, I have a high standard for fairly, right? So I'm the same person when somebody says, "Are they doing a good job?" I say they're competent, right? So when I say like somebody else will say, "Man, you're doing an amazing job," I'm like, well, I mean, dude, for me, competence is a very high standard, right? And then there's mastery, so. Like I said, that's where I can come across as a little bit clinical, right? But yeah, I was treated fairly, and I enjoyed, you know, what we did. Mm-hmm. That would be great.
That's all that really matters, I think, at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. As we know, that's not always the experience for a lot of people. So I think that can't be underscored enough as a leader approaching everyone kind of on that level playing field. And at the end of the day, wanting them to enjoy the work that they do, what more can you say, right?
Yeah, and I think just kind of riffing off of what you said, I mean, this whole idea of meeting people where they are, that might be another way to say it, right? When you meet people where they are, and then you bring them along, again, there's a lot of power in that, right? And then people can choose. They can choose how far they come. And then anybody can judge, is that far enough? Yeah, most times it is. And if it's not, let's talk about how we get you to come a little bit farther.
Yeah. You've got such a great reputation behind the scenes, Kurt. Just credit to you. Again, the colleagues that we share, the people that we get to work with, they speak so highly of you in so many different capacities. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share your insight with us. I think it's going to be valuable for our audience. And it's been a real pleasure for me getting to know you better, too.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You bet. Kurt, thank you so much. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Over 30 years ago, Insigniam pioneered the field of organizational transformation. Please continue to our library in the episodes page of your podcast tool of choice.